Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into the news of today. We're going to be starting off with a discussion of the ANC's grand new plan to win Johannesburg in the upcoming local government elections. We're also going to be talking a little bit about the Universal Basic Income Grant. And lastly, some thoughts on the SABC. So let's get started on the ANC's master strategy for winning the city of Johannesburg. This comes from a News 24 story. With the race for control of Johannesburg intensifying ahead of the next local government elections, the ANC is considering a strategy directly to challenge the DA by fielding a high-profile parliamentary candidate as mayoral contender. The shift in strategy follows the announcement by the DA that its federal council chairperson, Helen Ziller, will stand as its candidate for the city of Johannesburg. The story goes on to relate some leaked internal polling from the DA in August, which showed the DA at about 37% support in Johannesburg, with the ANC on 31. And an insider who spoke to News 24 saying, up until now, regional dynamics have typically driven appointments to mayoral positions, but that the National Executive Committee of the ANC has said that there is urgency in driving a proposed departure from tradition. We agreed we can't replicate the old methods. If we wait, it will be too late to introduce a credible candidate. They said, according to this insider inside the ANC, that the party's leadership doesn't think Dada Marrero or his opponent for ANC chairperson of the region, Loyiso Masuku, are up to the job, and that they might need to send in someone better. They cite as an example of a positive kind of candidate who could shake things up, Cyril Traba, who was deployed to Eteguini, who was formerly an MP and was elected as mayor of Eteguini in 2024, and they said this has been a great success. Makone, you know, I think there's quite a lot to be said about this one. The first one is, it's kind of telling that they don't even mention possible candidates in this story. There's no sort of like, oh, we're going to put in this minister, you know, we're going to bring back Parkstown. No, no. Like, and the reality is, I think, I can't think of anyone who would be even sort of vaguely credible as a mayor who might end up being in the job. I don't know. This just seems like desperation.
I thought I saw one name there. One, Loyiso Masuku, that was fielded.
I think he's the competitor with Dada Marrero for chairmanship of the ANC region.
I actually looked that person up. She's a female, and she is apparently the wife of a former Gauteng Health MEC, so keeping it in the family there. But I also was intrigued when I saw mentioning of high-profile members of parliament from the ANC who would, you know, possibly challenge Helen Ziller, put up a strong challenge to somebody like Helen Ziller's mayoral candidacy. But yeah, I think that this is an admission on the part of the ANC that there's dearth of talent.
I mean, what are they going to put Gwena Matasha, Fikile Mbalula? That would be fun.
Yeah, I think they know that that would end them. So probably not those two. I don't see somebody like Gwena Matasha leaving, you know, the NEC, the top seven, to go and serve as a mayor in Johannesburg. I think that would be way too much for him. I think he enjoys being, you know, falling under the radar and being influential behind the scenes. But and I think Figile is eyeing for president, so certainly not mayor. But I see the admission from the ANC here that there's a lack of talent. And I thought I saw, you know, them, if this article is intimating at the ANC possibly looking outside of itself to, you know, conduct interviews with people who are not yet members of the ANC, much like the DA. You know, this is what I presume it would be much like the DA, where you can interview for this position of mayor and then you'd have to become a member shortly after. So talent dearth is something that we've identified, and not just the ANC, but across the political spectrum. You know, there's just not the sort of candidates that would pull people in. And that's why you saw the Ekurhuleni mayoral candidate from Action SA be, you know, somebody that's quite sensationalist, like a TV person, somebody who's like hunts down, like a drug, has a drug busting show, basically. And so I'm expecting to see a lot more of that, a lot more political theater as we're searching for candidates for them who could be mayor of Joburg. And I wouldn't put it past the ANC to also look in the same direction as Action SA, although, as you posited pre the show, it's not clear that the branches would particularly welcome that move where you effectively ignore candidates that they field and go for, this top-down approach of electing or rather appointing people, essentially parachuting people into positions, so that you secure this candidate that's in the view of the high echelons of ANC qualified, but it ignores the processes that, branch members have been eagerly awaiting for their own turn, to run for these high positions in the party.
It's interesting how wide the perception of Joburg as a kind of poison chalice to try and run is. And I reading some of the interviews with Helen Ziller before she decided to put in her candidacy for Joburg mayor. She basically says that the DA asked a whole bunch of people, who presumably who all were quite high profile, who had managerial experience. That was sort of the implication. And all of them pretty much said no. It's not worth it. There's too little money to be made from being the mayor because the mayor's salary isn't that great, which suggests these, are people with a lot of money. If they're turning down the mayor's salary, we could do better in the private sector. There's no hope of turning it around, all that kind of thing. I think Helen said that the last straw was some candidate agreed and then had an illness in the family and withdrew. And it's a difficult job, running a really big city is akin to running a very large company. It's something that you do kind of often quite need some real sort of managerial skills to pull off well. Even if you're a competent person generally, it's just a kind of a job like no other. And then when you put into that it is, pays less than a lot of comparable high level positions in the private sector or in even other parts of parliament or even in the bureaucracy sometimes, you can kind of think, it's difficult to attract the talent here. And that seems to be what finally pushed Helen in. So I'm not surprised the ANC is having this problem, but I also think it is remarkable that the party really, maybe I'm just ignorant, but I can't think of a single name of someone who would really make a credible splash as Joburg mayor. And I think, as you say, this really points to the ANC's just kind of dearth of talent. But, who the best they could probably come up with is sending Parks Tau, who was previously a mayor of Joburg, back to the city. But, while his mayorship had a relatively good reputation at the time, I think it has dimmed since as some of the sort of structural problems that he created as mayor have become more well known and more widely explored. So even there, that's not like an amazing candidate. And of course, I doubt Parks Tau wants to give up being the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition to go and fight a battle that he's probably going to come out second best in Joburg. I think the DA would have to have a really terrible election to not emerge as the biggest party in Joburg. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily they'll get the mayorship, but if you are the biggest party, it puts you in a prime position to get the mayorship. So currently, unless the ANC refuses any kind of potential coalition agreement with the DA in Joburg, I think that Helen is probably the favorite. And even if the ANC finds some sort of high profile person, I don't know who that would be. I mean, can you name that many ANC MPs?
Struggled to come up with names. I think that the challenge is not also just naming or coming up with a candidate, it's that the DA created this competition where Helen has blew the standards, out the park of what it actually takes, what kind of candidates we should see being able to compete against her. And her coming out, as the first sort sort of mayoral candidate we've gotten from these big parties has just created a standard that I think those other parties are going to have a challenge coming up with somebody who can challenge her adequately. So I think that that's where the issues rest for these other parties. It's not just coming up with a person. You know, Pakistan was in the ANC. I think he's recognized as somebody that can possibly do the job. It's a question of, can he do the job, but also outshine the big spotlight, and that is Helen Zille and all her accomplishments and all the confidence that people have now, you know, placed in her as a front runner in this race. And I think that's going to be an impossible task for them.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, is it's never mind, you know, you need someone who's kind of credible that they can actually run the city. But at the same time, you also need someone who can command the stage. And the ANC really doesn't have anyone. I mean, I guess they could send Cyril, but he's allegedly busy being president, so he probably doesn't have the time. Anyway, okay, let's move on to our next story. This is one of those things where I wouldn't say I'm in favor of it, but I have a sort of sympathy to at least hearing the arguments for it. I think there's some good ideas in here. This is an article in the Daily Maverick titled "Time for SA to Ditch the Myths and Get Behind a Universal Basic Income Grant, Say Researchers." Now, this sort of starts off well enough. It talks a little bit about how the Social Relief of Distress Grant, which was introduced during COVID, and has kind of become a little bit like a sort of a trial run, I guess, for a universal basic income grant. You get 350 rand a month if you are in, have basically no other income. Because it's not permanent, there's some concern that it will be cancelled soon, although I doubt that's going to happen, politically speaking. But anyway, some researchers have said that the Universal Basic Income Grant's time is now and that we should introduce it. They use the case of a guy who's become an activist for this. His name is Dadi Mabe. He said that when he gets that Social Relief of Distress Grant, it's a major change in his day's fortunes. It says, quote, "You can take 72 hours just to raise 20 Rand when you have nothing. So when it happens, you get 350 at a go. It helps you a lot. You can be sitting thinking, how am I going to eat today? And then that notification comes. You stand up. You have energy. You can go do a couple of things that need to be covered. It means a lot." He's an activist with this group called Pay the Grants. And he basically is advocating for the expansion of the Social Relief of Distress Grant. He goes on to say, "We are grant claimants, but we are also working. We are volunteers. We are activists. We are doing the cooking, gardening, and cleaning at places where we stay. We are asking neighbors for small jobs. We are working. So this narrative that Social Relief of Distress grant claimants are lazy is a lousy narrative. We should not be demonized." Then this article quotes some researchers who say that the Universal Basic Income Grant is great because it slims down the bureaucracy around producing, you know, handing out grants. You know, you don't have to do verifications and say, okay, this person, do they have a child? This person, are they over 65? Are they still alive? Or are their dependents claiming from them? Is this person really unemployed? You know, all those sort of things that happen with other forms of welfare. This is just a flat thing that everyone gets. So everyone sort of can be quite, you know, it cuts down all the paperwork, basically. And the idea is that people have a sort of baseline to fall back on so that no matter what happens in their life, whether they run completely out of money or have some sort of disaster before them, that they are able to at least hold on to being able to buy food and that kind of thing. But then, so that's the bit I'm sympathetic to. But then we begin to leave reality. So one of the people quoted here, Dr. Kelly Howson, says that the failure to implement Universal Basic Income Grant comes back to political will. And this is a quote, "It's the kind of fiscal conservatism that ultimately benefits the financial sector, creditors, and the wealthiest in our country. There's an inability from policymakers to look past the myths and see the benefit of investing in excluded communities and people." These activists in favor of the Universal Basic Income Grant say that it should be higher than the poverty line, the amount of money you get per month. Now that's about 1,700 rand per month on the upper bounds of the poverty line, and about 50% of the country is below the poverty line. So that is a huge amount of money. I just did some really basic calculations here, and that seems like it would cost something like 1.2 trillion rand a year, which is, shall we say, kind of close to the government's entire annual budget. Dr. Courtney Hallink is a research fellow at the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at WITS. A sociologist says that criticism of grants as creating dependency and laziness have their roots in the dark part of the country's history, quote, used by apartheid and before that colonial officials to justify excluding black South Africans from the welfare state. She also says that it's mistakenly cast as something that would be an additional burden on taxpayers. The funding proposal for UBIG could just come from better tax compliance and mining royalties, especially from international companies that benefit from mineral wealth in this country. Wow, it must be nice to live in such a wonderful fantasy land. You know, we just, who knew there was just like this like trillion rand just sitting out there in tax compliance, and we don't even need to raise taxes. It's all just magic. And all these mining companies that are making so much money that they're all closing down their mines, yeah, no, we can just extract whatever we want from them, and for the low price of doubling our national expenditure per year, we could achieve a living standard where all people were living slightly above the poverty line. Makone, am I being unfair?
Not at all. In fact, I want to point out something about that last comment where the professor, I forget her name, makes the point that opponents of universal basic income are basically these staunch defenders or relics of apartheid. She reveals her own prejudices there because the UBC would be granted to everyone, including white people. So while all the sudden focus on how it reflects badly on people who want to latch it onto black people and assume that it's because they're lazy or what else did she say creates dependency, it does create dependency though. What we've seen over the years is an increase in the number of people who are getting government grants, and I think the SRD blew that proportion to the extent where we are always reflecting on the number of taxpayers against the number of grant recipients because it's an untenable situation in South Africa. And as you point out, the government's own entire spending for a year is not much further from, that one line item now, which would essentially be the UBC. And even if you centralize government spending on social grants or welfare services across the board, I think you'd still only make a dent in what's actually required to pay that UBC. And also when we're talking about streamlining social welfare, are we also including like access to healthcare or access to education, or are we just talking about all the grants, like pension grants and disability grants and other social welfare programs such as those? So no, I am entirely against this. I'm not even amenable at all. And it's because what you give up as an individual, you cede power to creating this monstrous government. It's an enormous state that wields a huge amount of money that it would purport to be in our favor, but I highly doubt it, especially in a country such as South Africa, when you have these corruption cases that have sort of become part systemic. They've become part of the government. We have to accept them as part of our governance structures. So I'm opposed to that, but also on principle. I don't want to live in a world where the government is that big. And in a country like South Africa, where we have like low-hanging fruit opportunities to actually grow the economy, to ensure that grant recipients can, by their own effort, acquire, upward social mobility, improve their own lives through education, through jobs, through improved standards of living by their own doing, where there's still a huge opportunity to absorb a lot of those people into the economy through work. I don't think we should even consider the UBC. I think it's an easy way out. I think for more developed economies like the United States and the UK and basically the OECD countries, that's something that's within reach. But for us, where we could still grow the economy, the IR always speaks through its Blueprint for Growth papers about our economy doubling in size in 10 years if it grows at even just 7% of the rate, which is like if you look at how much it was growing in the mid 2005s, it's plausible it was growing at around 5%. If it grows at 7%, you double the economy in 10 years. This country looks completely different just by erasing those barriers to growth. We don't even have to do much. You just have to remove the things that are causing investors to be reluctant to invest in South Africa and attract that foreign direct investment, and also encourage investors in South Africa who are sitting on top of piles of cash to deploy that capital to developing sectors that would again absorb those people who this UBC would be mostly beneficial to, although I understand that everybody would earn it, if, including middle class and upper middle class people. So,
Well,
yeah.
even if it's only people below the poverty line, that's like half the country. That's like at least 500 billion rand just by itself.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think even just looking at people who live in poverty, to say it's fiscally conservative does not even begin to describe just how dire, South Africa's government spending is looking. One of our increasingly growing and encroaching line items is debt servicing costs. We can't even, pay debt without us feeling it as a country, pay off the debt that we've acquired as a country without even feeling it, where you now have a debt servicing ratio that's becoming as big as some of our biggest spending items, like social welfare, like education, like healthcare. So no, I think South Africa still has a lot more growing to do, in terms of literal economic growth, where we can absorb more people into the economy by their own effort, and not just bypassing it and introducing the government as a way of, helping people latch on to social upward social mobility.
Some other just minor things on this article. So it's published by the Daily Maverick. It seems to kind of be a sort of reporting or re, you know research piece, and yet it reads like an opinion piece, right? Advocating for these things, and yet like there's no actual sort of quotes or anything from anyone who thinks this is a bad idea. It's kind of amazing that there's this sort of world of people with, PhDs and work in academia and that sort of thing and activism who have no connection whatsoever to reality. I mean, we're also activists. We like to, no one would take us seriously at all if we didn't bound ourselves at least a little bit to reality, which we try to do. Yeah, I don't know. This is just crazy stuff and it's just complete fantasy stuff. We can't even begin talking about a UBI in this country. We have so many other problems to solve. And you know what? What's depressing to me is how it sets the bar so low. Like, let's assume we gave everyone in the country 2,000 rand a month. And let's say we could somehow afford that. And if everything else stays the same, that's not going to make people's lives much better. Okay, yes, people will be able to afford food. Good healthcare? Nope, that would still be unaffordable for everyone. They'd still be forced to use government hospitals. Being able to send your children to good schools? Nope, still unaffordable. Being able to live any kind of life with real luxuries? Nope, it would be enough to buy food and, do the basics of getting to places. Just, it's a vision for people like, it's a vision for making poverty more comfortable rather than actually ending poverty. And the goal should be ending poverty. This is not it.
Ending poverty sustainably. And like you're saying, Nick, this is just a temporary solution for what, a 10-year program now, problem now in South Africa, where there's no growth, no job creation, and people are just increasingly dependent on the government for, basic things. And again, that UBC of 2,000 rand is just half of the median household expenditure in South Africa. So aptly described there as just, improving poverty but not ending it or eradicating it.
But I'm sure proponents of this idea would tell us that no, suddenly all this spending would create just absolutely magical amounts of economic growth that are completely sustainable and definitely based on real productive increase rather than, just inflation. But anyway, let's not get too bogged down in that because I think that's all a silly idea. Last, let's just talk a little bit about the SABC. SABC has submitted its annual report for the 2024-2025 financial year. To Parliament, and no surprises, it's losing money, quite a lot of money, 253 million rand in the last year. 85% of South Africans are not paying their TV licenses when billed, and revenue growth has been pretty flat. The SABC's revenue was 5.2 billion rand, and they spent just over 5.4 billion rand, which is a 3% increase from last year. So not terribly surprising that the SABC is not super healthy financially. The main argument, it seems, for keeping the SABC around these days is that it promotes the development of languages and provides a space for sort of culture and stuff that might not be commercially viable. Our constitution requires that we sort of protect and enhance all of our 11 official languages. So you can think, especially a language like isiNdebele or Tshivenda or Tsonga or something, those, quite small languages in South Africa, they probably do need a little bit of subsidy to be kind of, kept healthy. But I don't know, Makone, this whole TV license thing, it feels very 1960s Britain. No one is paying it, or 15%, which to me is a shockingly high number. What should be done here? I mean, there's lots of call from the ANC for funding reform, but what does that mean?
Yeah, I think the ANC is suffering from a combination of factors. One of them cannot be ignored is that these are the ripple effects of state capture. We've seen this with Eskom as well, and Transnet, and SAA, which were like the state-owned entities that were under capture during the Zuma era. And again, these are the consequences that South Africa is still enduring years later. That to SABC's benefits, I'm not even sure that good management could have stewarded them out of this mess, because there was systemic hollowing out of these institutions during that era. Another thing is just technology. Podcasts and streaming services are way more accessible. They produce a really good content that you don't have to. With YouTube, for example, you don't need a subscription or paid subscription to access, the content on there. It's quite accessible. It's free if you can suffer through the ads, where, SABC again is operating off this stuffy license model that, quite frankly, I think it's being kept around by the boomers and and the older generations. I don't see many Gen Alphas and Gen Zs, people who will be mostly paying for a service such as a license fee in the next 20, 30 years. I don't see those sort of people being the target market for a license model. So it's being alleged that the Minister of Communications and Digital Comms is developing a model to, or has he has hired a company to develop a model. Then this the concern from the parliamentary chairperson of the Committee for Communications and Digital Comms, Kusela Diko's concern is that model which is being developed may not arrive soon enough. So apparently the ANC, the SABC has really run out of road. I think what could be done is eliminating the license option entirely. And perhaps that means if more people have access to SABC, then you have a bigger pool of advertisers to pull from. I think the evasion rates, the license evasion rates, demonstrate that majority of the people aren't paying them. So the article says that they've raised only 15% of their revenue from the last financial year from these license fees, and the rest is from government grants. And I'm guessing maybe what remains after that is like advertising and other, revenue streams outside of the government and fares. So I would argue that doing away with the licensing option entirely is probably the way to go. And maybe creating like a more accessible version of SABC, where you don't necessarily need the television or even like DStv to watch it. And that way you open yourself up to more people and hopefully more advertising.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that honestly, if you just got proper management that was responsible and tried to live within its means in the SABC, you could probably actually run it well without necessarily, making a loss. As we know from every sort of state-owned thing, there's just so much graft and corruption and misspending, and we will never forget the wonders of exuberant spending during the Claudio Motsoeneng era, where Claudio continues to be one of the most amusing characters in South Africa, and it's a, it's a terrible stain on our country that that he was positioned in such a high position of power and influence. But the SABC is still pretty big. It's still one of the biggest kind of traditional media outlets in the country. And the idea that you can't make any money off it, like at all, that we need to pump in, because I presume the ANC's ultimate policy proposal here, coming from the portfolio committee, is going to be, well, no, we must just give it a bigger government grant or something like that. And it's like, well, that'll be like pouring water into the sand. There's no point in that. You can make this thing profitable, it just needs to be properly run. And, maybe narrow its focus a bit. I mean, are there things that SABC does now that it really doesn't need to do? I think there probably are. Just kind of interesting that this is still sort of sitting there, this TV license thing. I mean, I don't even own a TV. The time of the TV license is I think very long dead.
Yep, neither do I. And I missed that point about the SABC living beneath their means. You're absolutely right. I think the time of the SACB, SABC, that's how archaic they are. They don't even come naturally to me. But the time of them living life lavishly has unfortunately been eclipsed. And as you say, grants can only keep them going on for so long, but to develop a sustainable business model, they'll need an overhaul of their operating expenses, but certainly of the model that's operating. And I don't have a TV either, so making it more accessible to people is probably how they extend their reach.
No. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, and thank you everyone for listening. We hope that you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.